Finova Podcast Episode 1, our predictions for 2022. Welcome to Finova Podcast Episode 1. My name is Stuart Coates. I'm the CTO of Finova. We're recording this Monday the 13th of December in the Finova office on Oxford Street in London. With me I've got Adam Brodie, the co-founder of Finova. Hi Adam.
Hi Stu, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Why are we here today then?
Well, I thought we'd set some predictions for 2022. Put bold predictions, and given that I don't know a huge amount about technology, I thought I'd bring you along and see what we can get together.
Well, that's great, because I don't know a lot about finance either, so we'll probably revisit this in a year's time and we'll be found to be fools when all our predictions are not held true. So what's excited you this year? So what sort of sectors have you been interested about this year, and what do you think is going to be hot next year?
That's interesting. So from a seed to series D type investment space, that venture capital space, I think this year has seen a lot in future of work, educational technology, and healthcare, health tech in particular. I think that those trends are going to continue.
And with future work, do you mean since we did the pandemic lockdown, everybody's moving remote, so you've got the likes of Zoom, Teams, or is it something different?
Yeah, Zooms and Teams, all those types of software which are around helping people to work remotely and from home. Because I think while people are going to start coming back to work, you know, we've only seen in the last few weeks here in the UK that more people are going to be encouraged to work from home at certain times of the year. That may continue that's probably likely to continue into 2022 and possibly next winter as well. But I think there's also going to be opportunities. So in the venture capital space, it's all about what are the problems in the world, what are the business problems as well that need solving. And I think Hopin is a brilliant example.
That's a conferencing platform, isn't it?
Yeah, set up in 2019. Just before the pandemic struck, and it became a unicorn, I think, in 2020. That's going from strength to strength, got some major enterprise clients, and I think there's an opportunity for other businesses that are in that space solving real problems to really scale up pretty quickly and attract some big venture capital money.
What other sectors are interesting? Is it education and climate of any interest?
Yeah, so education tech and health tech. So again, they are looking at problems which have been thrown up during the pandemic. So how do you school your children from home, and how do you help people who need to access, for example, GPs or other doctors when you're at home and you can't get to the GP, or doctors need to do more appointments and get them lined up more efficiently. So those types of software, I think, are going to be even more important.
And I certainly know in education, my son, some of the software he's been sent home with or sent home to use, it's left a lot to be desired, really. It's pretty universally awful, the stuff his school's been using. What's your experience with your kids?
We've been home learning as well. I have to say the school's been great. The software largely been Teams-based, but I'm trying to remember if there's been any applications which have been standout, which I thought have been excellent. And off the top of my head, none have really jumped out. What about you?
I think the live lessons over Teams have worked well. It's where they've bought in other software as a service that's just not worked. It's we're constantly getting emails from the school saying, oh, you can't log in because it's down, and then we're talking to our supplier. So I think there's a lot of miles to go there to make sort of home learning and remote learning really work. But the live lessons with Google Classroom and Microsoft Teams seems to work quite well.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think where the experience of my eldest son, who's 8, the school seems to have reverted to the big tech companies. So it is Microsoft application, it's Google Classroom by and large. And I think that they've been quite intuitive for people like me, who's not brilliantly up to speed on these software programs.
I know, speaking to one of the teachers, the biggest problem is keeping their attention, because the moment you put a child in front of a screen, their OCD kicks in and they go off and do other things and don't pay attention to the lessons, and they can't see that they're not looking at the teacher anymore. So that's been a challenge.
Yeah, lots of emojis, GIFs, and instant messaging.
It used to be throwing balls of paper at each other when I was at school.
Exactly.
So any other sectors? I mean, the one that has excited me over the past probably decade is robotics and process automation. Is that seems to be getting bigger and bigger as we go.
I mean, look at one of the major problems the world has seen this year is supply chain manufacturing, getting enough goods out to meet the consumer demand and business demand. So there are problems there, and entrepreneurs, I'm sure, are going to be looking at addressing all sorts of challenges here through robotics and automation. What do you think, those two?
I think process automation's been sort of the big thing with business process re-engineering. That phrase has been around for as long as I have, and that's quite a long time. With robotics, I think that's with physical robotics, that's becoming of age now, where you go to the likes of Milton Keynes and you've got these little starship robots ferrying goods from the co-op to your front door.
Yeah, I've seen them. It's been around for a long time.
Yeah, they get stuck in snow and they sit there sort of getting properly confused. But if you also look at the Amazon warehouses, there's just robots everywhere in there. The people are doing the thing that robots are not good at the moment.
Well, Ocado, good example as well. Is it an online supermarket or is it a...
It's a logistics operation, same as Amazon, really. So that's quite interesting. Where in the world is all the VC money these days? I mean, I see a lot of Silicon Valley stuff as usual. Is it all coming to the UK post Brexit, or is it going to Europe? What do you feel?
So that's an interesting point. So definitely this year, amongst our clients, so a lot of. Tech businesses, software and hardware, but predominantly software. We've seen a lot more US investors investing, particularly at Series A and Series B level, than we have in previous years.
And that's in the UK?
That's in the UK. So I think if we're talking about terms, what that means for UK businesses is they're raising bigger rounds at Series A, in particular. So maybe a typical Series A round with a UK venture capital company might be between, I don't know, 5 and 8 million pounds. We're seeing, when it involves US investors, East Coast or West Coast, it's around the $20 million mark. So more higher valuations. Terms are still quite similar. So clearly you're looking at 1x non-participating liquidation preferences.
You're going to have to explain that to me.
Okay. So I think there's a pretty well-found rule in the world of venture capital investing, which is last money in, first money out. So when an investor invests their money, say $10 million with a liquidation preference of 1x, it basically means that they will get their $10 million back first. Yeah. Or their pro rata, whichever is the greater. That is the non-participating element.
Okay.
Well. And I think it was a good PwC research, actually, which found out that it's around about 75% of term sheets are 1x non-participating liquidation preferences.
Okay. And we'll probably find that and put that link in the show notes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Excellent. So any other things around VCs you'd like to talk about?
I think one thing that you've seen... a lot of headlines but also significant progress is on diversity. So it was pretty well documented about the lack of diversity, the dominance of men in particular and white males in venture capital, prominent venture capital roles. I think there's been improvements made in that respect, and hopefully that will continue into 2022.
Because as Finerva, our client base is relatively diverse, isn't it? We've got lots of female founders within our client base.
Yep, founders coming from all over the world. I think the one uniting thing is that they have a presence in the UK, but gender, ethnicity, race, religion, it's pretty diverse in the UK. And I think we're making big strides over here as well in that respect.
Yeah. So the biggest things I think are going to change next year is, I mean, I think the thing leading it is the pivoting of Facebook. Facebook have decided a couple of months ago to rebrand as Meta. Now, Facebook's a big social media platform, but primarily is an advertising outfit. If you want to know how the advertising works behind Facebook, there's an excellent book called Chaos Monkeys, which is a superb read, written by a guy who started off the advertising engine behind Facebook. But the metaverse is not really a new thing. It's 2003, there's a company called Linden Labs came up with a thing called Second Life.
Right.
Where it's quite primitive, and you build your avatar, you walk around this imaginary universe, and companies were spending millions and millions of pounds to get a presence within Second Life, and it's still going. It kind of died off, but it's still going. But what I've seen from Zuckerberg is exactly that. I haven't seen anything new. So whether he's got something remarkable in under the covers, he's going to come out with it, I don't know. Because I mean, you've also got the other universe, Minecraft. I mean,
yes,
my son plays on Minecraft. Yeah. I guess yours probably
mine
do
too,
as well.
Yeah,
everybody's kids has played on Minecraft, which is just another sort of virtual world that they play in, and companies are investing in it to get marketing presence mainly.
Does it matter if it's new though, Stu?
No, it doesn't. If you look at Minecraft, it looks like something from the 1980s.
Because it's like Lego almost.
Well, yeah, it's to use a technical term, it's a bit 8-bit. It's kind of looks really, really primitive, but it isn't. It's really complex behind the scenes. But if Linden Labs couldn't make a big go of it, they still exist. They turn over some money, but they're not worth billions and billions. What is Facebook going to do to differentiate themselves? Are they just going to do more of the same and collect people's data and sell it to the highest bidder, which is what they do at the moment? Or they could do something else. I don't know. I mean, it's quite interesting.
So why are they pursuing it then?
I don't know. They took a big hit when Apple closed down a privacy hole on the Apple platform. So Facebook lost a lot of personal data from their users. They couldn't track them anymore. And if they couldn't track them, they became less valuable to advertisers.
Yes.
So they took a big hit there. I don't know what they're doing next. It's difficult to see. Whether they're going to do something. I mean, they flaunted with a cyber currency, a cryptocurrency.
Yes.
Don't know if they're going to put that into it to do sort of cryptocurrency payments in between people within their metaverse. It's difficult to say what they're going to do.
So you touched on one thing, cryptocurrency. That's an interesting, really interesting area. We see it coming up quite a lot in the tech space, and it's obviously it's getting more and more airtime. I read yesterday that football clubs are now selling crypto currency to their fans.
But they're what not saying cryptocurrency, are they? They're selling NFTs.
Okay, what's the difference?
So, right. So cryptocurrencies are effectively there's two big ones mainly. There's Bitcoin and Ethereum. Bitcoin is probably the first one that was on the market many, many years ago. And if you had some Bitcoin back then and held on to it, you're probably not working anymore.
Right.
So it's very difficult to say. You hold a cryptocurrency wallet, which is basically just a bunch of numbers. And all of the cryptocurrencies work on a thing called a blockchain. We're not going to get into blockchain now because we don't have all day here. But it's kind of a virtual currency. It's not backed by anything apart from the blockchain. It's mainly a proof of work thing, and we can talk about proof of work. And I'll put some things in the show notes too for people to do some reading. But it's a decentralized is the main thing. Now, there's lots of countries coming up and banks, central banks, saying we're going to do our own cryptocurrency.
Yes.
But they kind of lose the point. The whole point around cryptocurrencies was it's decentralized. It's not controlled by any one entity.
Right.
You could almost say that all the benefits of a centralized cryptocurrency is already there with the current fiat mechanisms we have in each country to do very fast payments. One of the big problems with crypto at the moment is to do small payments is actually quite expensive. So it's not unheard of for a Bitcoin payment to have a 30% fee attached to it, or an Ethereum payment to have a 30% fee, just to actually do the transaction, to actually transfer the money.
Wow.
So, yeah. So there are various different things going around the edge of Bitcoin. There's a thing called the Lightning Network, which deals with very small small payments with lower fees. But that's really, really is in infancy right now, and it's very hard to get on board.
Okay, sounds like they're suffering from a lack of competition in what is probably an embryonic market then.
Well, no, it's a complex thing.
Okay.
It's still very much in its early days, and there's lots of geeks who are getting into it. And as a geek who's been into it for a couple of years, I still don't understand it.
Okay. So what are the technologies that excite you going into 2022?
Well, I think it's going to be more of the same. It's going to be sort of the marketing term is AI, but really machine learning, the ability to collect more and more data and run algorithms over it faster and faster. Systems get faster and faster, they can become more intelligent or have more data and analyze and make intelligent decisions on it. And I think that's just going to grow bigger and bigger. And I think I see what we've seen over the past year is problems entering the sort of the tech space where everything comes out of China.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's made in China.
Yes.
So the moment China catches a cold, so there's the phrase, the moment China sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold. It's probably a very, very poor analogy at the moment. But it's kind of, once they stop shipping stuff, the rest of the world suffers shortages. And that's not just computer chips to make laptops. It's cars. It's everything with a chip inside it. So I think there's going to be a move away of a certain amount of manufacturing coming out of China and going to either other areas of Asia or being brought into Europe or the US.
I've read in quite a few places about semiconductors being a huge area of opportunity for investment in 2022. Is that something you see that's going to be a big trend?
It's interesting because the people making the big money in semiconductors at the moment, the likes of Arm, who are fabless, so they don't make their own kit. They just hold intellectual property. There's very few actual people who make silicon these days. There's TSMC, I think it is, in China or Taiwan. But there's very few people make it. So the likes of Apple, who are one of the founders of Arm as well, they're kind of splitting with Intel. So Intel and AMD were the big boys, on certainly on laptops and desktops. Apple are making their own silicon now. Well, they're subcontracting it out. They're using the same ARM technology they've been using in the iPhone for years. So I think that's really shook it up. But I think there's money coming into the IP side of chip technology is one thing. To put money into the manufacturing side, you need a lot of money to set up a fab.
Right.
We're talking tens of billions to set up a fab.
Okay.
So big money, it's got to be a big VC.
Fine.
The other thing that's interesting over the past 6 months is, we at Finerva, we use a lot of software as services, and we've suffered with outages of our suppliers, mainly down to the likes of Amazon going down. I mean, last week, major part of Amazon went down on the east coast of America, and that took out lots and lots of services.
Yes.
So I see this year, certainly a lot of people reconsidering their use of some cloud technologies, or at least analysing the service level agreements a little bit better to make sure if they're paying for a service, that if the service is not provided, they actually do get their money back.
Are you talking about the end users, so businesses using SaaS tools, or are you talking about the SaaS providers working with AWS?
I think it's both. I think as businesses, if you're paying your accountancy software that's provided in the cloud, and that happens to be hosted on AWS, it's going to be a double hit. We as consumers or business consumers of that accountancy software, we don't want to pay for something that's gone down, or we want to be compensated because we've got people sitting there can't work. In the same way, the accountancy software will be wanting to call on SLAs within cloud providers. I mean, there are a lot of cloud providers out there these days. So if they've engineered the software properly, they can work across different clouds. So if one goes down, they can just switch over to the other one.
So do you see other people looking at alternatives to AWS?
Definitely. I mean, the other big one really is Microsoft Azure. So there's that. Oracle have a cloud. IBM have a cloud. And there's lots of other little providers. And for certainly for some of the smaller systems, having your own private cloud is not expensive these days. But you do have to hire somebody who knows what they're doing.
Sure.
The other thing that I see changing in the next year are social networks. You got Jack Dorsey moved away from Twitter a couple of weeks ago, and
so back to Facebook again, always true.
We're back to Facebook. We've come full circle, and I think that the whole of the internet is going to sort of it's kind of imploded on itself. People are realizing social networks are not always a force for good. They are sort of not good for your mental health at times.
I think, yeah, after a long period of lockdown and working from home, when these organizations boomed, then sure, I think there's a lot. I mean, small sample, but I know an awful lot of people who've just said, oh, I've had enough of social media, I've come right off it.
Yeah, and I think the Facebook metaverse dream is generally unhealthy. Humans need to see other humans face to face.
Yes.
And meet, not necessarily in a crowded pub at the moment, but they need to see people face to face, like we do in our office.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more, actually. And I think it's probably, you know, long periods of lockdown, certainly in the UK, has really kind of brought that to the up into the consciousness.
So I think we're pretty much done here today, aren't we? So
we've put the world to rights.
I think we have done. We should do this again.
Okay. Well, Stu, it's been good fun. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Adam. Thanks for listening to us today. We'll have some show notes with all the links and contact information on finervapodcast.com. And if you head over to finerva.com, you can subscribe to the Finerva I Am a Founder newsletter.